KVOE, live and local, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, presents the On Air Chat. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Souter and Aaron Harder.
Beautiful Wednesday morning to all. Welcome to the On Air Chat. We are brought to you by CB Financial. Craig Barnwell feels the income is the outcome that matters most in retirement. Call 620-208-6777 for a free consultation. And Bruce Davis Construction for commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more. Call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. Good morning, Steve Souter.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning also to Ron Thomas, who joins us today.
Morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing great.
We have special guest Brent Thomas, who is now provost and vice president for academic affairs. You just keep moving on, Brent. Good to see you.
Good morning. Glad to be here today.
Move your mic just a little closer. There we go. So let's talk a little bit about your path to being the provost. Has that always been a goal? When did it become a goal? And how did it proceed?
You know, I never had a goal of becoming a provost, never had a goal of being in administration. I started out as a field biologist, teaching biology and working with students, and I loved that job. I loved that part of my life. Never really had much interest in administration. I ended up at Emporia State as a faculty member in 2006. And Emporia State was a great fit for me. I got to work with students. I got to teach classes, take students out and catch critters and get them in the mud, and that was wonderful. And somehow, after a couple years of being here, the department chair position suddenly opened up in the Department of Biological Sciences. And my immediate thought was, well, wonder who's going to have to do that. And then a few colleagues dropped by my office and encouraged me to think about it. And so I thought about it for a bit, and there were a few things that I thought, you know, really needed to be done in the department at that time. And I thought that these are things that I was passionate about and would like to work on. So I thought at the time, I'll do this, and I'll do it for a little while, work on those things, and then I'll move away from that and let them find a real department chair. But to my surprise, after a couple years of doing the job, I found it much more rewarding than anyone could have convinced me of originally. And so I did that job in the department for about 6 years, then similar pattern played out when the dean's job opened up. It opened up suddenly, and there were several people dropped by and encouraged me to consider it, and I did, and ended up being in the dean's office for almost 8 years, give or take. And then, more recently, the provost job opened up, and I was very happy being a dean. I really enjoyed that work. And, you know, once the advertisement for the job went out, and I was still really not considering it, but, you know, the longer time played out, and there were people who were encouraging me to at least consider that possibility. And fairly late in the search process, before the deadline to submit an application, I ultimately decided to submit my application, mainly because I felt like I wanted the university to have at least the option of considering someone who had been at the university for a long time that could provide a bit of continuity and someone with a lot of relationships on campus and a lot of knowledge of the university itself. So I threw my application in and went through the search process and ended up getting the job.
You didn't follow him directly, but David Cordell was a provost for a number of years. He gave you a pretty good track record to follow.
He certainly did. you know, I have a coffee mug sitting in my office that my wife actually made for me. It says WWDD. You know, what would David do? David is someone I have the utmost respect for. David, he was a true gentleman, stand-up guy. I truly value the time I had to work with him at Emporia State. He's the one that hired me as a dean originally. So, I learned a lot from David, and still have occasional contact with him. I learned recently that him and Pam joined the Grandparents Club just fairly recently. So, but I do miss him and think of him often.
Describe the provost job. What we all know about provosts. Emporia State actually hasn't even had a provost all the time, have they? Is that really? I mean, you're also vice president for academic affairs. Does that describe it pretty well?
Yes. Gosh, I've kind of forgotten what year it was. I want to say it was a little more than 10, 15 years ago or so. The position was sort of combined as provost and vice president for academic affairs. There were some nomenclature changes, but it's been long enough ago I don't remember the particulars. So we've had a provost and vice president of academic affairs position for quite some time now, and I've had the opportunity to work under several. Tess Mehring was the provost when I first became a department chair, and then, of course, I worked under David for, about 8 years under his leadership, have learned a lot from both of those individuals.
So what does the provost do every day? When you come to work in the morning, what's...
You know, that's a hard question for me to answer. I go to a lot of meetings. That's one certainty in my job is that I'm going to have a lot of meetings. Sometimes those meetings are going to be with the deans. You know, we have a weekly provost council meeting where all the deans and several other folks from outside of academic affairs, the registrar and a few other individuals from student success, we meet to just touch bases, share information, talk about any initiatives that we're trying to move forward on, those kind of things. We don't necessarily meet every week, but it is a standing meeting. I have meetings that individual meetings with deans to kind of cover the stuff that's very specific to their colleges that might be going on, any challenges, any concerns. They also share good news, too, during those meetings that they want to pass along, which is always great. Meetings with students. Sometimes students will have issues or concerns, and they've not been able to get an answer or get an answer that they found acceptable. So sometimes I do end up meeting with students. I meet with the president, other vice presidents. I sometimes talk on the radio.
Yes, you do.
So, you know, it's really... it's a complicated job. I think the same was true of the dean's job and also the job of department chair. They're complicated positions. And anytime I come in and I think, okay, today is the day I'm going to get this done. I'm going to work on this accreditation report, or I'm going to work on this letter of recommendation from a student, or whatever it is, I find that it's not uncommon for my plans to change the minute I walk in the door because something happens. There's a leaky pipe in the basement of one of the buildings and it's flooding, or there is
That's a provost job.
Well, it's not the provost job to go repair the plumbing. thankfully, I have limited skills in those areas, but I can also, do minor car repairs, but they don't necessarily expect me to do that as part of my current role.
You report directly to the president?
I do, yes.
And the deans report to you? Is that the pecking order?
Yes, sir.
All right. Anything else about the job you want to share before we move on?
You know, I guess I would just like to say that, you know, I've been at Emporia State now for a little over 17 years or so, and I've been very blessed to have opportunities to be a faculty member, a chair, a dean, and now a provost, and see the university through from a lot of different perspectives. And I've enjoyed working at Emporia State, and I've raised two kids here in Emporia, and I'm very blessed that both of them are students in the Hornet Nation right now. I've got one that's graduating next month, or no, it's this month. Oh my goodness.
In
a few short weeks, I'll be standing on the stage as she walks across to receive her diploma. And then I've got a son who is finishing up his sophomore year. So I've just been, I think, really blessed to be a part of Emporia State and have the opportunities that I've had here. Even though I would say that none of these were really planned on my part.
You guys have a question before we move on?
Yeah, just a couple of quick questions. First, thanks again for being here, Brent. We appreciate you taking the time out of your obviously busy schedule. When the provost position came up, you were an interim for a time, were you not?
Yes.
Yeah. So how aware of you were you of the situation at Emporia State? Obviously, you know firsthand how things were going up there and the situation that led Emporia State to do what they did after getting approval from the Board of Regents. Did you know kind of this was coming down the pike?
Well, you know, I think I've having been at Emporia State in a variety of roles for a long period of time, I've had a lot of experience with budget cuts and had a lot of exposure to the finances of the university and the units that I was leading at the time. You would think that, you know, the more you do something, the better you get at it. But I found that not to be true with budget cuts. Every budget cut only gets harder with time. And you when you go through one after another, after another, after another, and there are, you know, there are certain things that you can do to respond to a short-term budget issue. In other words, times are going to get better. This is a short-term problem. It's an issue that will be resolved. The legislature is going to give us a lot more money next year, or our enrollment is going to go way up next year or 2 years from now. You know, a decade plus ago, I think we were all of that mindset that we were dealing with more of short-term issues with funding and budgets. But after a decade plus of that's just repeating itself over and over and over. And, you know, you kind of take some cuts that are available and convenient when you're dealing with short-term things. Maybe you've got a bunch of vacant lines, for example, and that's something that ESU had done repeatedly for over a decade, and we're not alone. That is a strategy that's used by a lot of higher ed institutions to address budget shortfalls. So you got X number of vacant lines that people have resigned, retired, and happen to be empty, and you just don't fill them. Well, that is a good short-term fix, you know, but longer term, you end up with an accumulation of bad decisions that were not strategic. You end up, because that position was vacant, you didn't fill it, and that was a program that was growing. That was a program that that now you've actually harmed it. You may have impacted that program to the point where now it had the ability to grow and now it cannot. And so I think a lot of those sort of non-strategic choices of convenience that we made in the past, they only end up leading to another budget cut in a subsequent year. So at some level, you know, year after year after year of experiencing those kind of cuts and using the same exact sort of list of standard things that we do to cut budgets to kick the can down the road in the hopes that next year is going to be better, at some point we had to accept the reality that this is not a short-term issue. The world of higher education is a very challenging world right now, and it is only going to become more challenging as time goes on. 18 years ago, people were just not having as many kids as they did 28 years ago or 38 years ago, and that catches up to us eventually. You also have an increasing skepticism among many in the population about, well, why would I go to college and spend this much money and to take 4+ years to get it when I could have immediately go do this and make X number of dollars? So we've got a lot of headwinds, not just Emporia State, but really across the board. And that's really not going to be true maybe for Harvard or Princeton. Their world is not changing. They have a different reality. But for the rest of us in higher ed, we are facing a pretty challenging future, and we have to adapt and we have to change. And failure to adapt, failure to change, I know is the wrong answer. We have to do things.
Let's use that as a good segue to take a break and come back and let's talk about those changes. You recently announced a move to create colleges and schools, and I don't understand all of it, but we'll let you explain that when we come back. This the on-air chat, Brent Thomas, who's the new provost at Emporia State, is our guest. You're listening to KVUE. We are live, and we are local.
Income is the outcome that matters most in retirement. I'm Craig Barnwell with CB Financial, and I've been in retirement and wealth planning for over 25 years. If I doubled your portfolio, that might not change your lifestyle. You'd still be you. However, if I doubled your income, that could make a significant impact on your retirement. So whether you're retired or you want to see how soon that can happen, give us a call to set up a free, no-obligation visit. You can reach us at 620-208-6777. That's 620-208-6777. Retire happy. Retire with CB Financial.
Warmer weather means it's time to tackle those spring and summer construction projects. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction is proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001. All the latest sports news with Greg Ray, 14 KVOE, 96.9 FM, live and local.
KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, and time now for a look at headlines being brought to you by Bobby D's Merchant Street Barbecue. Enjoy dining inside or the convenience of carryout. That's Bobby D's 607 Merchant, where it's all about the meat. From the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the latest local headlines, here is Chuck Samples.
Good morning, everybody. Salaries and compensation are the main areas of focus for Emporia City Commissioners. Their regular action and study sessions taking place here today. Lyon County Commissioners will be taking a look at some infrastructure matters with their action session taking place tomorrow. Concerns about Emporia State University's dismissals of over 30 faculty and staff this past fall certainly haven't diminished from the American Association of University Professors viewpoint, and not only after issuing a scathing 16-page report faulting both Emporia State and the Board of Regents for that moving forward. And railroad crossing maintenance continues in Lyon County here this week with several crossings closed both east and west of Emporia and also in eastern Emporia here for the next few days. KVOE forecast from the TV 13 weather team, sunny and 76 this afternoon. Possibility of some scattered showers and storms overnight tonight with a low of 53. Showers and embedded thunderstorms tomorrow and tomorrow night, 69. Maybe a shower or thunderstorm Friday and 78. From the 24-hour KVOE newsroom, I'm Chuck Samples.
Thank you, Chuck. Currently a light northwest breeze, sunny skies, 63 degrees at KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM. All the information you need, live and local. Headlines are brought to you this hour by Bobby D's Merchant Street Barbecue. Enjoy dining inside or the convenience of carryout. Bobby D's 607 Merchant, where it's all about the meat.
Welcome back to the on-air chat. Steve and Aaron and Ron Thomas in here with Brent Thomas from ESU, the provost at Emporia State, and we're going to talk now about some of the things that are being implemented. And I will tell you kind of let you know our third section of the show, we'll talk about that elephant in the room, the recent criticism from the Association of University Professors, and let Brent talk in what he can talk about it. Some of it is limited because there's ongoing things, but just let you know, we'll take phone calls in that last 10, 15 minutes. Brent, you recently announced the university, not you directly, changes in the makeup. Some of the things that I liked: improved space optimization, ability to create and implement consistent policies, and remove a layer of management. That's pretty heavy stuff. Tell us about the new setup.
You bet. First, a couple of things to kind of set the stage. You know, we have fewer students than we once had. We've got fewer programs than we once had. And in many areas, we have a smaller number of faculty. And so, you know, this did give us, I think, an opportunity to reexamine just how many academic units we have and how we organize and structure them. There was also, having been a department chair and a dean, and I was the dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, you know, I've had a long time and a lot of opportunities to observe what I felt like worked really well as part of the way we organize ourselves in academic affairs, and also see some of the challenges. And I can tell you one of the big challenges, one of the many challenges I had as a dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. It's a very large college, you know, and for most of my time as a dean, we had 11 departments. We did consolidate down to 10 just a couple of years ago, but still, 10 or 11 departments with 100-plus academic programs, 170, 180-plus faculty and staff spread across multiple buildings across campus, including one building off campus. And so, you know, that's a kind of a lopsided sort of structure when you look at some of the other schools. You know, School of Business is in one building. Many, many fewer programs, a lot fewer faculty. And just to give you an example, and I don't mean to pick on Ed Bashaw at all, but you know, Ed and I would sit in provost council sometimes, and many, many, many times, in fact, and there would be a need. The provost would be handing down information for us to take down to our units and talk to our people about those things and then report back on a multitude of things. This was a fairly regular occurrence. And occasionally, David Quartle might say that he needed that by Friday. Well, today's Tuesday. And Ed could walk back over to Kramer Hall. You know, he could walk up and down the hall, and probably in a couple hours, he could have talked to his folks, communicated, gotten the information and feedback he needed, and report back. Whereas somehow I need to go to that many people, that many buildings. And in other words, it's a bottleneck. It's a communication issue. So in many cases, I would have to rely upon kind of a chain of command to filter that down in multiple steps. Where now, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to talk to my department chairs across all those 10 or 11 different units, depending on what year it was. And then they would then have to take that information downward. And sometimes, you know, everybody's operating here to the best of their ability and in good faith, but you know the telephone game, or what it's called by different names, where you whisper in somebody's ear, and then they immediately turn and whisper in someone else's ear, and then you kind of compare the messages on both ends, and they never match. You know, there's very little resemblance. So I think we had some communication challenges and some lopsided sizes of our units. So we did begin a process of looking at, well, let's take a look at this. And this has all been done very openly and as transparently as we could possibly muster. I began talking about this on campus back in January. I hired two assistant deans, Amy Sage-Webb-Baza and James Ehlers, and charged them with the task of facilitating discussions and feedback on different models. I asked each of the deans to create different models for consideration of, in other words, ask them what is a better way, or what are some different ways that we could do this, and ask them to propose those as possibilities. We then went through a process where we distributed all those different models across campus to faculty, staff, and students. We provided opportunities for feedback, including anonymous feedback, but also emails or phone calls in really any form they wanted to provide feedback. We made that possible. Amy and James did a wonderful job facilitating those conversations, facilitating the feedback process, compiling the feedback, and then you know we had a couple of rounds of some revised models based on that feedback and further consideration, and then we began to narrow it down from there, and which ultimately resulted into our final model.
So describe that model for us.
Sure. All right. Well, what we had previously was essentially four colleges and schools, and then we had a bunch of departments, 17, 18, 19 departments. And what we've done now is we have kind of eliminated what I would call the middle layer. So the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences dean's office in its traditional form is no longer going to be. The teachers' college, as a middle layer dean's office, doesn't really exist in that form anymore. It's changed. Although we do have in our new model something called the teachers' college, it's not exactly what we had before. So these middle layer structures are now gone, and we have consolidated and merged what were formerly several departments. We have merged those and consolidated them into new schools. Like, for example, art, music, and theater. Art in the past was Department of Art, and music was the Department of Music, and theater was actually in Department of Communication and Theater. And all of those three units reported straight to the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, which then reported to the Provost Office. Well, now we have a School of Visual and Performing Arts, and that school includes art, music, and theater. And I've named an interim dean for that unit, as well as all the other new units. And now that one dean cannot, I think, do a great job alone. They're going to need some help. So we have the new units named. We've announced that. We've named interim deans, interim leaders of these units. Where we still have a lot of work to do, and this is where I'll be working with those interim deans as well as faculty and staff in those units, is to further develop out what kind of help do they need in those units. How many assistant deans do they need? Do they need program directors, program coordinators? What does the administrative support structure need to look like to make that unit work well? So just give you an example of how that facilitates, I think, faster communication. In the past, we've had a director of theater, and we still have that. That's not going away. We'll have a director of theater. Now, in the past, that director of theater would report directly to the chair of the Department of Communication and Theater. Then that chair would report to me as dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. Then I would report to the provost. So when you're talking about any kind of theater-specific challenges, theater-specific realities that need to be communicated and articulated, in order to move that up through the food chain of our bureaucracy, you had a lot of layers to get through. Well, under the new structure, we kind of consolidate that down in a way where it's a faster pathway. Now the director of theater would report to the interim dean of that school, who reports directly to the provost office. That is fewer steps. We also have some other advantages here, as I see it. You talked about space optimization. We've got probably about 20 or so academic offices. And when I say academic offices, I'm not talking about faculty offices. I'm talking about an office in the sense that it has a mail room, it has a copy machine, it's got a student worker or two answering the phone, there's an administrative specialist and a unit leader by the name of a chair or a dean. That's what I'm talking about in faculty or in terms of academic offices. Well, through these consolidations and mergers, we will not need nearly as many of those offices. Now, I'll be working with those interim deans of these units, and we'll be trying to figure out, okay, which offices do we still need, and what do we need them for? But without a doubt, we don't need all those offices as traditional offices any longer. We can eliminate some of those and convert them to other useful spaces, and it gives us some options that we didn't have before.
Questions?
And you had 10 or 11 programs prior in College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. What with the new model? How many have you reduced it to by like you just said, combining arts and music and theater?
Got it. Yeah, what was the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences with 10 departments more recently is now kind of broken out into the School of Humanities and Social Sciences, the School of Science and Mathematics, the School of Visual and Performing Arts, and then the other one is the School of Applied Health Sciences. However, that one is actually a consolidation and merger that crosses some of the traditional college school boundaries. Psychology and counselor education and HPER were all programs within the traditional teacher's college. And nursing historically has been a program that fell under the umbrella of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. Well, all of those programs are now united and merged together into a School of Applied Health Sciences. So I guess, in a sense, the best way I could say, if you're asking how many, we go from 10 departments under one college, what is it now? For College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, what it was from what it is today, I'd say we've taken all of that. We eliminated the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences Dean's Office, and well, we've merged and consolidated down into, I guess you might say, 3.5, because nursing is kind of part of one school,
sure,
consolidated with some other things.
Sure. But that goes to show that the university is now working as a whole as well, where in the past, what was you as Dean of Liberal Arts and Sciences was yours.
Yes.
What was Dean of Business was Ed's.
That's right.
The way the framework was set up, you didn't really have the opportunity to work together, and just by combining a college classes and fields that merge together a lot, I'm sure a lot of the folks that were in human performance were taking classes in liberal arts and sciences as well. Why not combine them? It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think that this new way of organizing does one of the hopes is that it will create greater opportunities for a lot of organic conversations that might not have happened otherwise. It does help remove some of the some of the walls that we have.
You.
Yeah, I call it academic tribalism. You know, we unfortunately, and it's not just true at ESU, it's a common characteristic across higher ed, unfortunately, we often view another unit as a competitor. Yeah, and
due to budget cuts probably in the past.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and there are real, I think, systemic reasons why that culture exists. The way we operate helps foster that kind of environment. And as much as possible, I would like to see us move as far away from that as we can. And by merging and combining some of these units together, I'm hopeful that that will help, you know, remove at least some of those walls and foster greater collaboration. You know, you can just imagine some of the best research projects that I had an opportunity to do as a faculty member were things that weren't ideas that came to me on my own. They were ideas that actually were spawned as I was checking my mail in the office, and I bump into a colleague who's getting coffee, and or they're trying to eat some cookies that someone brought and left up on the desk. And then in those chats in the hallway or in the office, wherever, we get to talking about different things we're doing, and all of a sudden an idea then emerges, a question emerges, and then we get excited about it, and then we pursue that, and we collaborate. And in fact, one of the papers that I published long ago now, that probably has been cited more than any other, was actually a project that emerged through that kind of just organic conversation that happened. So when you take a lot of these different related programs, and you sort of consolidate and merge them down together, and then put them together into a space where they're more commonly have these opportunities for conversations, I think that will ultimately result in a lot more of those opportunities for those kinds of interesting and unique collaborations across disciplines to occur.
Not only for professors, but mainly for the students.
Yes.
Huge benefit for the students.
Yes. I think there's possible collaborations that are actually already being discussed about different ways that we can potentially modify our programs by joining forces but across disciplines, adding some of the coursework that's offered by what was previously in a different unit, combining it with another unit's program. In other words, there are interesting programmatic possibilities that I think can be fostered through this kind of organizational structure, perhaps better. It's not that we couldn't do it before, but I think this way of organizing makes it a little more doable.
Well, there is obviously some heavy lifting going on here, a project of this magnitude, this new alignment. And you mentioned, Brent, that you received a lot of input from students, faculty, and staff to get this done. So far, how has it been received from what you've been able to tell?
You know, we received a lot of feedback. My colleagues at the university have thoughts on this, and they were willing to step up and share them, and I'm very thankful for that. As you might imagine, not everyone agrees with everything. You know, you might have one individual in the feedback that said, this is exactly the wrong thing to do because, and then another person says, no, this is exactly the right thing to do, and here's why. So there's a multitude of opinions. Literally on any facet of this that you wanted to talk about, you can find multiple opinions on it.
Is there opportunity for people to express their opinions?
Oh, absolutely.
One of the charges has been that there wasn't enough transparency and that not enough people got to speak up. Has that been changed?
Well, I don't find that to be I just don't agree with that statement. We had every unit, every college had town hall meetings that were facilitated by James and Amy. The models, various models were shared publicly with all faculty, staff, and students, and they were provided with opportunities to chime in with their opinions. So I think we have done our best to be as open and transparent on the process for this reorganization as we could possibly be. I just don't agree with the statement that they didn't know what was happening or that it wasn't shared with them.
It's a collaborative effort now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was a collaboration to come up with the framework, or was the framework there and then you went to the departments and say, what do you think of this?
We started off with models, you know, possible concepts. I think in LANS at first it was, I think there were about four or five different possible models that were rolled out for feedback. I actually met with the college at that time as part of a town hall. Actually, there were two meetings with them. James and Amy facilitated the first one many months ago, and I was not present. And I think the reason for that was, you know, give people a chance. Maybe some people might be uncomfortable if the dean slash provost at the time was present. Let them meet alone. So they did. And then a week later, I followed up, and then I met with that group. And we talked through, and they gave me their thoughts and opinions and their questions, and I answered them as best I could. And then we went back to the drawing board, and we, based on that feedback, we tried to revise and modify accordingly as best we could. And then we distributed out another round of models for another round of feedback.
Now, you mentioned that we have interim deans now for these new schools. Are these now job openings that people can apply for? How's that going to work?
Well, we use the term interim. An interim is generally what we do whenever we need to do something quickly. We've got a position that needs to be filled very quickly, and we just don't have time to do a search. So we find someone who we believe has the capacity to do the job, and we ask them if they would be interested in serving in an interim role. So these individuals are interims. And, of course, at some point, they're going to be very important individuals in terms of the transition process. They're going to be very important in building out the rest of the structure for the coming year, that they're going to need the help they're going to need to get the job done correctly. But at some point, we will need to fill these positions in a permanent basis. Now, generally, when we fill things on a permanent basis, those are handled differently. You pick interims, usually that's just an appointment that happens very quickly, sometimes without a lot of input. But when you do permanent searches, that's a different process where, the folks in the unit need to have need to be a part of that process. They need to have an opportunity to have some input and some influence over the selection of a permanent leader.
We're visiting with Brent Thomas, Provost at Emporia State. We need to get a break in when we return. We'll take phone calls if you have them as we talk a little bit about some of the criticisms of what's going on at Emporia State, and Brent will respond best he can. This is the on-air chat. You're listening to KVOE. We're live and local.
When your next project requires crushed limestone, contact Eagle Creek Quarry. Located 3 miles south of Hartford, the quarry has a variety of limestone aggregates to fit all of your personal property, construction, or ag needs. Their large loading area allows trucks to get loaded and be back on the road quickly. Call Eagle Creek Quarry at 620-392-5659. That's Eagle Creek Quarry, 620-392-5659.
Hi, Craig Barnwell with CB Financial. I've been in retirement and wealth planning for over 25 years. I can help you get the most sustainable income out of your Social Security, your 401ks, your IRAs, and your brokerage account. When you know what's coming in this month, next month, and every month, you'll be able to enjoy retirement to the fullest. Give me a call to set up a free, no-obligation visit. Retire happy, retire with CB Financial. You can reach us at 620-208-6777.
Your morning big gulp of information. Ron Thomas, Chuck Samples, and Greg Ray. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, live and local.
Good morning.
KVOE live and local, and time now for a look at sports headlines from the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the sports you need. Here is Dylan Sherwood.
Thank you, Sean, and good morning. The Kansas City Royals dropped its 10th straight game at Kauffman Stadium last night. They lost to the Baltimore Orioles 11-7. The Royals led 3-0 early, but then Baltimore scored 10 consecutive runs. The Royals continue their three-game series this evening. Zach Greinke will be on the mound for the Royals. Our coverage begins at 6 p.m. here on KVOE. Now official, Brian Osterman has been introduced as the 8th head coach for the Emporia State women's basketball program. Osterman has been the associate head coach at K-State since 2014. The Emporia State softball team opens the MIAA tournament today against Missouri Southern. That game will be played at the Invista Complex at Lake Shawnee in Topeka. Emporia State's Travis Morrison has been named the MIAA Track and Field Men's Field Athlete of the Week. He had a personal best throw of 61 feet, 4¾ inches at the Rock Chalk Classic. Emporia State's Ari Cordova has been named to the All-MIAA softball team. She's a second-team designated player. The Emporia High softball team was swept by Topeka High yesterday, 15-4 and 16-3. Emporia High hosts Life Prep on Friday. The Emporia High girls swim and dive team finished fourth at the Topeka High Invitational yesterday. Allison Weiss won diving, and J.C. Stutler was second in diving, and Allison Brown had the top swim for Emporia High. She finished third in the 500 freestyle. Up next for Emporia High is the Centennial League meet next Thursday. The Emporia High girls soccer team was shut out by Washburn Rule 8-0 last night. Up next for the Lady Spartans is a trip to Hayden next Tuesday. And former Kansas Jayhawk Joel Embiid was named the NBA's most valuable player last night. That's a look at sports. I'm Dylan Sherwood, KVOE, live and local.
Thank you, Dylan. KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, as we now return you to the on-air chat.
All right, welcome back to the on-air chat. Steve Souter, Ron Thomas here now, and Brent Thomas, Provost and Academic Vice President of the University, is our guest, and we have a caller on the Sutherland Studio Line. Good morning. You're on the on-air chat.
Yeah, good morning. I have a question about tenure. If tenure is considered an individual contract between two parties, why wasn't each individual contract negotiated individually per the policies of the Faculty Senate? And what authority do the regents have over that? And by the lack of that, is that perhaps one of the reasons that the three tenured faculty have been reinstated after their concerns? Thank you for your reply.
Well, Brent?
You know, the unfortunately, I'm not really able to talk about personnel matters and personnel decisions. So okay. I will just not be able to answer his question.
All right.
Valid question, though, in the overall grand scheme of things. I mean, people are certainly have concerns about that. Tenure has been a big topic with the whole process. And that door was opened by the Kansas Board of Regents, and they
feel like they have the Board of Regents felt like they have the authority to overrule tenure. So I assume they would have investigated that.
Well, with their policy, yeah. I mean, they opened that door and offered all, not just Emporia State, but that was a COVID pandemic-related policy that was opened up to all university, and that window now has been closed and, according to the Board of Regents, will not be visited again. That is what the Board of Regents president told us. Specifically,
Brent, part of the criticism in the articles in the Kansas Reflector said, well, Emporia State's financial problems weren't any different than hundreds of other schools. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, I don't have the financial information for other universities available to me, so I don't really know that I can say specifically about, you know, what other institutions are experiencing. However, based on what I am privy to and the news reports that I read and my conversations with colleagues at other institutions, I would say, yeah, the higher ed is facing some very challenging times, and it's been building and the headwinds have been growing for quite some time. And so the kinds of challenges that we're experiencing here at Emporia State are being experienced elsewhere.
Well, and the other people have the same option to do what you're doing. They've just chosen not to do so. Would that be a fair assessment?
I think that would be fair. You know, if you follow any of the publications that report, you know, on higher education, Chronicle of Higher Ed, Inside Higher Ed, those sorts of publications, you know, they report on these kind of things on the regular, and unfortunately, there aren't too many issues of those publications that come out where they're not talking about an institution and some big changes, some big cuts, big transformations, sometimes very painful, and they're done in a variety of different ways, but these are the realities that much of higher education has been facing and will continue to face into the future. So one option that universities don't have is to simply not respond.
Well, it's a very tough thing. You mentioned at the top, Brent, anytime budget cuts are involved and you're looking at cutting programs, which in turn leads to cutting personnel, that is never an easy thing. So when determining what programs to cut, was it basically an enrollment process? We don't have this many people in this specific class or program. I mean, did that lead to a big part of the decision of what programs would have to be eliminated?
Enrollment was certainly a factor, definitely. It was not the only factor, but it was certainly an important factor. You know, when you look at programs you know, in the most recent term, you had, you know, seven or eight headcount majors. You look and you see a trend of, hey, this has been declining for over a decade pretty steadily. Student credit hour production has been declining steadily for 10, 20 years. At some point, you do have to to look at that, and that has to be a factor. You know, you have students, you know, it doesn't do us any good to offer a program that students are no longer interested in signing up for. And we did have some very small programs that did get suspended. But, you know, that these are complicated decisions. You know, not every program is quite the same. They're all unique and different. They bring different strengths, different values to the table for the university and our community. And you really need to consider that, I think, fairly holistically. Financials, obviously, you know, looking at a program. How much does it cost you to deliver the program? How much revenue is it generating? You know, that I don't believe personally that should be the only factor that one looks at, but it has to be a factor that we looked at, and we did.
I think it's interesting that the people that are criticizing what's going on, they've got all kinds of criticisms, but they don't have many solutions other than going back to what hasn't worked for the last couple of decades.
You know, I can certainly understand the concerns that people have, and because I mourn the loss of programs, and I've been a part of higher ed for a long time, and I've enjoyed it. There's a lot of the things that we've done in the past that I wish we could still do, and but unfortunately, that just doesn't seem to be the reality that we're facing. The world is changing at a very rapid pace. And the realities in higher ed are changing at a very rapid pace. And we simply have to adapt and change as time goes on. And sometimes those changes are difficult and painful.
Go ahead. Take one more, Ron.
Well, it was a scathing report from the American Association of University Professors. And, you know, shifting and incoherent rationales, many events of concern, and I know there's only so much you can respond to here with us, Brent, here this morning, but a lack of meaningful faculty involvement in developing Emporia State's plan of action. Can you respond to that?
I think about the only thing I can really say to that is that the ESU does, we disagree with the conclusions of their report.
Okay. Well, let me try that from a different level then. We had two students in student government that were here with us a couple weeks ago, and they were really happy that they had been included, and said a lot of other people, the size of the leadership group from the previous administration to President Hush, what, almost went up about four times, went from six or eight people to 30, something like that. Is that accurate?
I don't recall the exact numbers, but yeah, the generality there that group of that meets as part of the leadership team has grown substantially with time, and President Hush did add ASG student leadership to that body. I have been extremely impressed with Bella and Haley. They have demonstrated great leadership for ASG over the past year during a very difficult and turbulent year. And it's really been a pleasure and an honor to really work with them. So, yes.
Well, we're in the tough part of the process. Actually, it looks like it's going well, not without criticism, but we appreciate you coming and joining us. Congratulations on your new job. And keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you for having me this morning.
Okay, Ron, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks, Brent.
Brent Thomas, Provost, Emporia State, has been our guest here on the On Air Chat. Brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction for commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more. Call Bruce Davis Construction. That phone number is 342-5001. And also, if you want to retire happy, retire with CB Financial. See Craig Barnwell. He's at 517 West 6th Avenue here in Emporia. Talk of Emporia is next. You're listening to KVOE. We are live and local.
Live and local. 1400.